Hey there, welcome to episode 15 of the Better With Running podcast. I'm Matt Davey, and along with my co-host, Zach and Newman, we're back to spread the love of the running journey.
That's right, Matt. Great to be back. And speaking of that running journey, today we've got a special interview with one of Run2BB's international athletes. From the US of A, we've got Supreth Manava from Austin, Texas. So I got in touch with his coach, Jack Davies, and gave him the keys to the podcast and the microphone to jump on. And I think after listening back to the audio, Matt, we might be out of a job soon.
Yeah, agreed. Jack did a mighty fine job, and I'm sure listeners will take something out of it. And yeah, it's so good to have that sort of international flavour and see how he sort of got onto run to PB and how him and Jack are working so well together and the progress that he's made. So it's a fantastic interview. But yeah, before we get go over and cross to that interview, how's your week been, mate?
Yeah, it's been good, Matt. It's been a bit of a mixed week for me. We're on the running front. I know we spoke last week about we were logging the K's and we were able to reach that target to for the Indigenous charity that we donated to, and then that sort of maybe I pushed the boat out a little bit and did a few more K's than I usually do, and I just pulled up tight on Monday night after a run, and it's just a niggle in my calf. It took a few days to settle down, but I'm back out there again. I got out on Saturday and Sunday. But yeah, just one of those things where if you just take the foot off the pedal of some of the maintenance, and I wasn't as diligent as I should be on some of those 1%ers, getting on the roller and doing some of the activations, and I think it got me unstuck, particularly at my age as well. How about you, Maddie? How are you traveling?
Yeah, pretty good actually. Yeah, had a knocked out, I think, about 100 and just under 155 k's for the week. Yeah, had a good week actually, and I don't know. I was thinking last night of increasing that mileage, but my body's is feeling probably almost better for it. Like I was walking around yesterday, Jeremy and I went for a bit of a trip down past Flinders, down the Mornington Peninsula. Check out some. It's a blowhole down there. It wasn't really working, or we couldn't get around to it. But I was walking down the stairs thinking, geez. After that, my legs actually feel pretty good, like tired, fatigued, wow. But not sore or anything. So, yeah, touch wood, it's going to,
Is that your biggest week for a while?
Yeah, biggest week since, Melbourne Marathon last year, I'd say.
Okay.
Hoping to, keep that sort of mileage and couple of sessions. Yeah, I think cutting back down to two sessions a week and not really trying to, hammer them home. Has really helped, with that being able to build up that mileage and touch wood, stay injury free.
And when you're in these blocks where you're doing more, you're at that level where you're hitting the 150k weeks and hitting the sessions. Is there particular things you're keeping your eye on just to monitor, make sure whether sleep or what you're eating, as well as 1%ers, like I mentioned that I wasn't doing the last few weeks. But just is there particular things that you're keeping an eye on as well?
Yeah, there is. After 20 plus years of running it, you get to know your body pretty well and what works for it. But one of the things I did notice, and I probably got stuck on a few years ago, was weight. And probably not eating enough through the day. And sometimes I find it hard because, you get caught up with work or whatever. And that I definitely wasn't eating enough. And I got myself quite flat at points in times during training, with this sort of a load. So I've really been making sure that I've consuming enough food during the day. I know my breakfast and my dinners are fine, but during the day, snacking a bit more. Probably increasing the amount of calories over my lunch as well. But then also along with that, making sure I get in at 1 to 2 gym sessions a week to work on my hamstrings, which I've always had a bit of trouble with. Mainly just hamstrings and glutes, trying to ensure that they're still firing. And they're the sort of things, I guess, that I focus on, as well as, after sessions, I always bring chocolate milk or chocolate powder and have that protein and carbs, get that in straight away. especially when you've got a double. You want to make sure that you're refueling as quick as possible.
Yeah, no, that's all good advice, because I think, you know, it can't be all encompassing. It can't take over your life, but there are small things that you can do that don't take long. And, if you prepare yourself to do these things through the week, they do make a difference. And I think, you know, I know from, you know, when I'm doing big mileage that, you are close to the edge a lot of the time. So you've just got to be, and it's just experience, and you learn from a few mistakes along the way, which we all have. Yep. And it's probably a good segue into to hearing about the interview that Jack and Supreeth talk about, because Supreeth, was just moved through the ranks and really immersed himself in the running culture. And I think you can hear from the interview that we'll throw to that, he's really enjoying the journey and the challenges and things that go along with running.
All right, welcome. I'll introduce myself first. I'm not a regular host on this podcast. So my name's Jack Davies. I'm a Run to PB coach. And I'm here today interviewing one of my athletes, Supreeth Manava. So Supreeth is based out of Austin in Texas, United States. And he's been being coached at Run to PB for almost half a year now. So hello to you, Supreeth.
Hey, Jack. Thanks for inviting me on.
No worries. So we'll just have a quick interview here about how you come across Run to PB, a bit of your progression. We'll talk a bit about mentality and mindset, the coach and athlete relationship and goals going into the future. So just to start off, tell us a bit about how you come across Run to PB and what made you sign up in the first place.
Yeah, so a little bit of background. I've kind of recently gotten back onto running probably about 18 months ago, and probably after about like 6 months of consistently running and knowing that it was going to be a part of my future, I'd been listening to the Inside Running podcast, which Brady's on, and I heard him talk about Run to PB in the coaching business. So I just kind of slapped down a bookmark on the Run to PB page, and probably towards the end of 2019, you guys started advertising this sub 20 project. And, I still haven't run under 20 minutes for 5K. So I saw that as an opportunity to kind of, just jump in, didn't have to, delay, getting that sort of coaching guidance, and thought that that'd be the best way to progress my training was to, see if I get some guidance from somebody who's a good runner. And, after speaking with you about kind of your coaching philosophy, I figured it was definitely the best step to, take my running to the next level.
Yeah, very good. And you spoke about the sub 20 project that attracted your attention. Sort of takes me to a bit of your progression in the 5K. So you had your PB from a while back in 2008, 21:56 there, but recently in 2019, before you signed up to the sub 20 project, you ran 23:22. So I guess that's a 3 minutes you were looking to shave off your times there. And with training over the past half of year, we originally got you down to 21:10, then 20:39, and most recently 20:09. So that's over 3 minutes you've shaved off there. So looking back, did you think that would be the amount of time you'd shave off, and just comment on that progression there for yourself?
Yeah, it's funny because I think the less work you put into your running, the bigger improvement you expect from yourself. But once you kind of get into the business end of, doing the training, putting in the hard workouts and all the volume you need to make your actual progression, you realize that it takes a lot more work than you think to shave off minutes, let alone seconds. So I kind of expected it all just to come down in that 10 weeks. I thought, I'm training with more specificity for this 20-minute 5K. I thought maybe missing that 4-minute pace by a couple seconds in workouts wouldn't be a big deal. But in these solo time trials, I found it a lot harder than I really expected to knock off that time. And I remember that first 21:10 that you referenced, I kind of went out that morning, thought, okay, worst case scenario, I might run 20:30, and then was getting really negative towards the end of that. And then until we kind of chatted afterwards, I didn't realize, like, wait a minute, I just took, you know, 2 minutes off the last 5K attempt that I had. Like, that's actually a really massive improvement, and it sort of set me up for that next step over the next couple months to get that next minute off the time. And yeah, that was pretty grounding to see that it took that much work. But I have a lot more confidence after experiencing those kind of struggles and getting that kind of incremental progression towards this 20-minute target.
Yeah, definitely. And yeah, sometimes you can get so caught up on that goal, and it's not till after, till you look back at the big picture and realize that you've come a very long way in a relatively short period of time. So I know before you started, you'd followed a few online programs and things like that. Can you just sort of compare and contrast the training there following off like a generic online program, and then also the training with Run to PB?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I guess my sort of personality is whenever I really latch onto something. So over the last couple of years, it's been running, but even before that with other hobbies, I'll kind of like really get immersed into it, try to find as much information as possible, you know, going on YouTube and, you know, getting books. Like, I read Arthur Lydiard and like Matt Fitzgerald books, trying to understand the running and training philosophy that you need to have to be successful. But that still doesn't give you the appropriate template for how to set up your training. Like, I didn't really trust myself just to take that and transition that into a training plan. So probably the most interesting thing that's happened since, you know, getting you to set my training has been the variety within the workouts. So, you know, I can go online and find all this information about, okay, you need to have this kind of progression. You can increase your volume by X percent week to week, or like, you know, training block to training block. But in the end, I would probably just end up jogging, not really pushing myself to hit those big goals. And for the most part, I think some of those progressions are a little bit aggressive for beginning runners. So I found myself kind of on the train of getting some training going and then finding myself getting an overuse injury. So I found our method a lot more approachable and sustainable, while also, you know, focusing on hitting good workouts with quality towards hitting target paces. And yeah, it's definitely paying off in the times that I'm able to put out in these time trials.
Yeah, very good. Next thing I want to speak about, we're talking about the 5K. You've got down to 20:09, so just 9 seconds off that sub 20. And I'm sure with races starting to come back, you've got a bit of competition and a bit more drive, I guess, we'll get under that 20 well and truly. So recently we've done a 10K time trial. So coming into coaching with us, you hadn't recorded a 10K time before, so it was a bit of an unknown about what to aim for and what we're going to go for. So we sort of, I sort of had a look at your training and the 5K time trials and tried to work out a relative, a realistic goal, I guess. And we were aiming for 42:30. And it was only last week where you ran this and you achieved that and ran 42:28 for your first 10K. Speak to us about how that went, how you're feeling going in, and the time trial itself.
Yeah. So I was really kind of excited to do the 10K because, like you said, I didn't really have a time on the board. And having shot for that 20-minute target with the 5K, I was kind of piling on all this pressure onto myself to really push to hit these paces and to like hit these even 4-minute splits to, you know, get over the line with that. So I thought this would be a nice opportunity to kind of step away and push myself. And even if I had a really bad day, I'd set a time that I really had never run before. So going into it and discussing that with you and setting that target of 42:30 was nice because it gave me a target to really push myself for while still being realistic. And yeah, just going into the actual time trial itself, I made sure I didn't want to do it on a track, because I don't think I could do 25 laps on a track by myself, at least not in the current situation. And yeah, went out to a bike path and just went 5K out and 5K back. And, you know, based on some of the advice you gave me, I tried to go out feeling pretty comfortable, and probably about 4 or 5K in, I was feeling pretty good. But then around the midway point of that time trial, I was pretty close to on pace, like maybe 10 seconds off halfway through. And then my stomach started giving me trouble. So then I started panicking. And for like the next, you know, 4 or 5 minutes, I was thinking like, oh my God, am I going to have to bail? Am I going to have like an emergency? And I don't know. At some point it just kind of settled itself, and I was able to refocus on the actual effort itself. And that's when my legs really started to get heavy. It was probably around like 6.5K. And I was like, well, I was about 10 seconds off in the first half, and lost a little bit of time thinking about whether or not my stomach was going to go on me. So I just kind of told myself, let's not let this slip anymore. And then that started to kind of spiral into that negative mindset that I'd had in the past with the 5K efforts. And I don't know what it was, but maybe around like 7.5, 8K, I thought back to the mental tips that you guys had given out on the blog post a couple weeks back. And you and I discussed that as well, about when I should really be using those things, like when you can kind of trick yourself into getting that little extra out. And somehow I was able to dig deep and flip my watch over to the clock face and just thought, let me just give it everything I have. And I think getting towards the end of that path, seeing more people around, I kind of stood up a little bit taller, ran a little bit stronger, and then just really pumped my arms to see if I could get under that 42:30, and somehow made up 20 seconds in the last, you know, 2.5K. So I was really pleased with how that turned out.
Yeah, definitely. And I know you referenced there that we spoke about the mental side of things in the 10K, because it does really get hard in that those final few K, and it's good to see that the tips work. And it's just something as simple as counting to 10, that sort of stuff, trying to distract yourself, that really helped. Mm-hmm. So it was pleasing for you to get under that time, and it's a good benchmark setting into the future and to aim for. And when races get back on, it'll be good to do some 10Ks there as well.
Yeah, and it gives me a lot of confidence, because you don't have those external factors right now. So I think, you know, when the weather's a little bit better and we have people around, hopefully that competitive nature will kind of drive me forward a little bit more too. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Now, I know we spoke a bit before about, I guess, the coaching at Run to PB and that sort of thing. You being in United States, me obviously being here in Australia, where about 17 hours, I think it is, time difference. Communication is important for any athlete and coach, probably even a little bit more important when we're so far apart and the times are different. We're speaking now on different days. So have a bit of a chat about, the communication between us and how important that is when needing to modify or alter training.
Yeah. I kind of referenced this before, but you know, my personality is such that when I get really into something, I need to kind of like get into the nitty gritty details of the training. And I kind of obsess on the little details. So what I found worked best for us, and I think you've kind of reaffirmed this, is, you know, you set my training. I can see it on final surge, maybe like 10 days out or 7 days out. And I kind of try to process that and see what's going to be challenging in the next week. And then I just try to give you feedback or ask you questions maybe 2 days before I have a workout. Like, did you have a target pace in mind if you didn't actually put it in there? And after a session is done, I can give you some feedback. Like, you know, I felt pretty good. I slept pretty well the night before. Maybe I didn't, had a busy day at work, or, I'm feeling pretty good today, versus, you know, maybe the weather's pretty bad. So I just kind of adjusted my expectations in my head to give you an idea of, like, because I'm always worried that I'm going to post a session and you're going to see like something really terrible and just be like, what happened? So I just kind of justify that in my head and try to give that information back to you so that, well, you know that I'm not like dying over here and everything's going all right. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, as a coach, it's good to get as much information as we can, which you'll do really well. It sort of helps us, modify things if we need to and sort of get that confirmation that things are going well and, you know, we might implement that in the future again and really tweak things, which is really good. So I think, communication is probably one of the most important things with the coach-athlete relationship. Now, I guess looking into the future, we know that you want to break the 20 minutes for 5K and we'll work on the 10Ks, that sort of thing. We've even had a bit of a chat about working on the mile, getting the time down there a little bit. But stepping up in distance, I know the half marathon, you've got a PB of 1:44 at the moment and yet to debut in the marathon. You were planning on running Oklahoma in April, but that got cancelled with what's going on at the moment. But looking into the future, talk to us about the half marathon and marathon and the aspirations there with goal times and goal races, I guess, that you want to do.
Yeah. I think with the half marathon, for anybody who doesn't know listening to this, that that 1:44 was posted right before I kind of jumped on board with Run to PB. So I'm really hoping to, in the short to medium term, to make a big improvement, try to get maybe like in the 1:35 or maybe even under 1:30 for the half marathon. And I think there's a lot of good opportunities for half marathons to do that over here, especially in Texas. I think there are a couple races here in Austin that will present a good opportunity for that. And for the marathon, like you said, I was planning on doing the Oklahoma City marathon that was planning to go forward in April and is postponed till October, but I'm not very optimistic about that going forward this year. And that's my hometown, so it's an important event for me. I really was looking forward to debuting there. Actually, I don't think I've told you this, but I signed up to that race in 2019 as well and picked up an injury about a month out from that race. So I remember the day after the race when they released registration in 2019, I signed up for the 2020 version. So I'm really kind of frustrated that it's not happening. And that's definitely a goal race that I want to do, go home and take down that marathon. And just looking at the times, it's kind of, I think if I'm able to get a lot out of myself, like maybe in the 3:15 to 3:10 range, I could be sort of in the top 50 of that race. So that's something that sort of was in my head about my debut effort in the marathon was to, you know, try to put myself in that position where I could be more competitive and have a good day racing it rather than kind of go for an overly ambitious time and then kind of blow up. And looking forward kind of in the medium to long term, I definitely want to get under the 3-hour marathon barrier. And over here, that's a Boston Marathon qualifier. So that'll be a pretty cool race to experience as well.
Yeah, for sure. Like the Boston Marathon's spoken about a lot in the running community, and yeah, to tick that one off would be awesome. So I know we've spoken about increasing the mileage, that sort of thing, but at the moment when it's a bit uncertain, we'll just keep ticking along, and then when the time's right, then we'll work towards that, and it'll be exciting to see you do your first marathon and where we can go from there. Another thing, a little bit off topic, I guess. So obviously at the moment with COVID-19 happening, all the Australian listeners will be aware of what's going on here and aware of the restrictions, that sort of thing. It's been a little bit different in United States of America. So let us know where you guys are at with the restrictions and lockdowns, that sort of thing. You're in Austin, Texas. How does that compare with the rest of the country and is there any signs of races being coming back on over there?
Yeah, I think things have kind of shifted in the last week or so here. So we've kind of been in this holding pattern since about mid-March where, you know, everything has just kind of been called off. People who can work remotely have been, that would include me. So in general, like life has been kind of standing still. And in the last maybe 2 weeks or so, things have really started to surge here. And I think that's a result of places kind of reopening, like businesses and bars and restaurants and stuff, as well as the protests, which obviously happened for a good reason over here last month and are probably still ongoing. So yeah, just kind of paying attention to the news a little bit. There's been probably the worst days and the highest number of cases reported probably in the last week or so. So it kind of looks like we're going to be in this pattern for the foreseeable future of just things going back on lockdown. And I think they're already, like the local government, at least here in Austin, is putting measures in place to try to scale back how many people can be in spaces and wearing masks when you go out. So yeah, I don't think we're going to see any good news on the racing front. If anything, we're probably going to get confirmation that races are canceled over the, you know, our fall and into the winter. So, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And yeah, we're similar. We've seen a little bit of a rise in the cases recently after restrictions were lifted a tiny bit. So I guess all of us here and all of us and all of you guys over there, we're just hoping that things start to come under control and we'll just keep on training until races come back on. So yeah, I guess thanks for the chat today, Supreeth. You've given up time on your Monday night. I guess we'll continue to monitor you on Strava. You're in the Run PB group. If anyone wants to follow you along there, I'm sure we'll have some more 5K and 10K attempts in the coming weeks and months, which will be good. But hold off on the half marathon and marathon time trials until races are back on.
Yeah, I don't think I could manage to hurt for as long as I would have to for those. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Thank you. We'll be in touch and have a good Monday night.
Yeah. Thanks, Jack. Appreciate you taking the time to talk to me.
No worries. See ya.
Yep.
It's so refreshing to hear from Supreeth. And now he's really immersed himself in the running culture. And like you hear him there buying running books, watching YouTube videos, and then to hear how clearly it is that he's keen and excited to continue his growth as a runner.
Yeah, it's always great when you see you hear and see those stories along the way with Run to PB, where people just sort of get into the sport and start to sort of develop all aspects of their life, I guess it does start to seep into, but also enjoying the running culture and all the things that come with that. But and one of those things is I know as a runner you start to get into taking notice of your shoes and equipment and gear and all the rest of it, and I think it was good chance for you to catch up with Sammy the Shoe Dog for another shoe chat episode that you guys went across some of the new technology and some of the, I think I've had a quick listen. You had a look at some of the flats that are on the market.
Yeah, that's right. We had a few emails come through about some questions that people were interested about certain topics on shoes. And we put out a story on Instagram asking if anybody had anything that they would like us to discuss. And yeah, we had an amazing response. And so, yeah, we ticked off quite a few questions. Yeah, and including that, talking about some performance racing shoes and the difference between and benefits of the different shoes that are out on the market at the moment. And also talking about, you know, specific types of shoes for neutral runners and how to tell the difference between race day shoes, and talk about trail run shoes. And yeah, Sammy's obviously got a wealth of knowledge there, and yeah, it's so good to hear him speak about it. And with a lot of passion too. So yeah, let's throw across to that right now. Well, here we are back with Sammy, the Shoe Dog McLean, ready to answer some very pressing and topical shoe-based questions. Welcome back, Sammy.
G'day, Matty. Good to chat again, mate. We missed you. Missed you on the last show.
Yeah. I was. I think I was out. Maybe.
Out running.
Out running. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Clocking up some miles. Yep. So since we last spoke, there's been a few developments in the shoe world. What sort of things have you got going there?
Yeah, like I think I spoke to Zaka 2 or 3 weeks ago on the last episode, and it's kind of amazing that, you know, within 2 or 3 weeks we've got another 2 carbon models out there in the industry. So it just kind of shows how quickly things progress in the industry. Yeah. So just recently we had the ASICS Meta Racer that came onto the shelves last week, and then the week before that the Saucony Endorphin Pro hit the shelves. So yeah, plenty of carbon models out there at the moment. It's exciting.
Yeah, and so that actually leads us into the first question. So we've got quite a few questions come in from our listeners and from Instagram. And the first one from was, what's the difference between the performance racing shoes, Saucony Endorphins Pro, ASICS Meta Racer, and the Nike Next Percent?
Yeah, sure. Good. Three good models there. Mm. Look, I suppose like a really easy way to differentiate between the ASICS, the Saucony, and the Nike would be like the stack height of the shoes. So the Meta Racer, from memory, I think that sits at about the stack height's like 25 mil off the ground. So it's a lot more of a lower stacked shoe. And then you kind of move up into the Saucony Pro, which I think sits at about 35 mil, and then you've got the Next Percent, which I think sits just under that limit of 40 mil, which is 39. So yeah, I suppose the Meta Racer probably feels a little bit more like your traditional racing flat. And then the Saucony Pro goes up a little bit with that height, and then the Next Percent, you know, you're sitting like at a really high kind of stack height. Interestingly, like the actual offset amongst the three shoes is pretty similar. Like I think the ASICS Meta Racer, the offset is 9 mil. The Saucony Pro sits at 8 mil, which is, that's fairly standard for Saucony models. And then the Next Percent, I think, is a 9 or 10 mil offset as well. Yeah. So, you know, from a racing point of view, you could almost target the Meta Racer at maybe that 5 to 10K type distance, the Saucony Pro around that 10 to half marathon distance. And then I think what we've discussed before is maybe the Next Percent is almost the longer you go in a race, the more beneficial that shoe can be to people.
Yep. And do you reckon like a lot of people have come from that racing flat and they like the feel of the ground a bit more? Does that make a difference in the stack height? Like you get more of a feel for the ground itself?
Yeah, spot on. Like, and I think that's what we're seeing in these most two recent releases is, you know, some people are putting them on and going, oh, you know, yeah, that definitely feels a little bit more like what I'm used to from a racing flat, particularly in that Meta Racer. It's interesting. I had a guy in the shop last week. He's a masters athlete. He kind of focuses on the 1500 and 800 meter distance. So, you know, he does a lot of track work, still trains really seriously, even though he's, you know, well into his late 50s. And he was, you know, very interested in the carbon shoes. And I put the Next Percent on him and it was just too kind of foreign to him. Whereas the Meta Saucony Pro, you know, just felt a little bit more like what he's used to in a shoe. Yeah. So I think, you know, I think they're going to definitely suit, you know, a pretty broad run.
Yeah. So I guess the feedback has been pretty good for the Saucony Endorphin Pro and obviously the Nike Next Percent. So it's going to be interesting because the Meta Race is quite new on the shelves. It'll be interesting to see how that goes when people are trying them on, because I've had a couple of my athletes bought the Saucony Endorphins, and they've really enjoyed that shoe, and yeah, found they've been.
Yeah, it's good to hear.
And it just,
yeah, I think that
putting those sort of shoes on it, and even in, you can even enjoy running more because, I don't know, it just, they feel so comfortable.
Yeah, which is a big part of shoes. Like, yeah, that perception of how they feel to you is like really important. And that's like different for everyone. Like we actually, you know, we're pretty unique in what we feel in the shoes and what we like about them.
Mm.
You know, and you want to have fun in your shoes as well. Like it's, you don't want to overlook the fact, you know, you don't want to be always so serious in your shoe selection. Like you, particularly when we don't have any races at the moment, it's nice to kind of, you know, look at your shoe rotation and go, oh, I'm going to pull this off the shelf today and go and do a session in that and just, you know, have a bit of fun in the shoe as well.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah.
And yeah, we had another question from Jack. Since 2015, PBAX has revolutionized race shoes. Can you explain why and how?
Yeah, it's a good question. Like it kind of follows on from like just talking about those three carbon models that we spoke about there. And I suppose like PBAX is the foam that's now being used in all these carbon plated models. It's actually PBAR, but the foam itself is PBAR, but you know, the industry is just kind of calling it PBAX. So I suppose Adidas kind of had a go at this, you know, about 10 years ago, using a TPU foam, which they branded the Boost. I'm not sure if you remember the Boost, Matty.
Yeah.
And I mean, the Boost was good in that, like, it was quite energy returning, but what they didn't quite get right with that Boost TPU foam was it was still pretty heavy. Whereas now what they've been able to kind of manipulate through the PBAX foam and the PBA is that it's like incredibly light, but even more energy returning.
Mm.
So, you know, that's obviously got a correlation with how it's performing for people and the, you know, just the capacity of the shoe. Like it's, yeah, it's incredible.
Yep. And then have you noticed any correlations between these shoes and injuries?
Not yet, but I reckon it's definitely going to be a space that we should watch. Like I think it's pretty clear that the shoes are racing shoes, they're performance shoes, and maybe if they're overused as just a training shoe, you know, there's potential there for injuries to present. You know, like I think I did read somewhere about the Nike Oregon project guys that first used the Next Percent or the 4% as it was called back then. And, you know, like I think we're going back to 2016 and, you know, a number of those runners have had, you know, sacrum stress fractures and that through the spine and so forth. So, you know, whether that's just a coincidence or whether, it, you know, there's something more to that, we'll kind of have to watch. I don't think we're going to see more overuse injuries. I think maybe we might just start seeing different types of overuse injuries, which, you know, it'd be interesting to talk to some of the physios and podiatrists that we are aligned with the shop and whether maybe in the next 12 months or so they start seeing some different types of injuries with their patients and whether that's actually got any correlation to the carbon shoes that they're using.
Mm, yep. Yeah, because I've been trying to make sure to rotate my shoes for the sessions and I like the idea of having somewhere to go for a race, so not always jumping into the best shoe that you can for your training sessions, like moving, because you know then you've got an extra boost then when you go to a race. So making sure that in each of the sessions I'm not wearing my Next Percents or whatever my best performance shoe that I've got. And as well as that, I'd like, obviously I'm not too sure about whether it, or not, we're not sure whether it does or there is a correlation between the shoes and injuries. So I try to make sure at least to rotate just in case that is a factor.
Yeah, and you almost don't want to like diminish the placebo effect of the shoes. Like I think there is probably a strong placebo effect that these shoes give us. So I think if we overuse them, then maybe, yeah, come race day, that placebo effect might be less. Whereas by just, you know, keeping them there for race day, you know, you almost convince yourself that you're putting something faster on your foot, and therefore that's going to translate over into a faster race as well. So I think there's a little bit of that involved with how these performance shoes work for people.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, I reckon. Yeah, just that the mental side, like, I've got these shoes on, I'm going to go faster, like that, going into a race like that, it's going to probably change your mindset to be more positive than what it potentially is at that time. So yeah,
going that's right, yeah,
any advantage like that is going to hopefully mean a better performance.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question, the whole, you know, what's PVAX or PBA and so forth, because I think the foams in these shoes are definitely, like, much more influential on the shoe's capacity versus what the actual carbon plate is. Like, I think, you know, carbon plates, they've actually been around for, you know, they've been sampling with carbon plates in shoes for probably 30 years, but they've never actually had the right foams to complement what the carbon plate's trying to do.
Yep.
So now, you know, so I don't think the actual carbon structure that's going into the shoes are really that different with the brands. It's just more now that we've got these awesome foams that are energy returning, you know, incredibly light. And, you know, actually, I probably forgot to mention with the ASICS Meta Racer and the Saucony Pro, like, even the longevity now in these racing shoes is, you know, like, the durability is getting a bit more up amongst that, you know, what a traditional daily trainer is. And so, you know, to get like 600-700K out of a carbon ratio is, you know, that's great.
Yeah, because when the 4% came out, it was just like, you get a couple of marathons out and that's almost about it.
Yeah, and again, like, I think how the individual's using them will kind of influence that too. Like, you know, if you're a lighter person and, you know, and pretty efficient and, you know, fairly economical with the way you run, you're probably going to get, you know, you might get 400K out of the next percent. But if you're a heavier guy or runner and so forth, you might only get that kind of 200K benchmark out of that shoe.
Yeah.
But yeah, the foam is really what it's all about at the moment in the industry. Yep. And it's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's a good question by Jack about that, how it has revolutionized since 2015, that foam.
Yeah,
we had another question from one of my athletes, actually, Talia. She had a really good run on the weekend in the 10K.
Awesome.
And yeah, she uses a neutral shoe, and she's asked, what are the top 3 to 4 neutral shoe options for long training runs?
Long training runs, cool. Mm. Yeah, I mean, I'll try not be biased towards any brands here and just mention a couple from you know, all the brands that we happen to stock. So, I mean, I think maybe it was in the first episode where I talked about neutral shoes. We kind of classify them as like a neutral cushion or a neutral stable type option. So, you know, like, if I went through Brooks have got what they call a Ghost 13 or a Glycerin 18. So that's a, you know, we've got a cushion option there and a bit of more of a stable option. Nike have just launched their Pegasus 37. So that's a nice cushioned daily trainer that you could use on those longer runs. It's a pretty versatile shoe as well. New Balance, they've got an 880 and a 1080. They're both kind of good neutral high mileage type shoes. Mizuno's just released their updated Wave Rider. So I think we're up to number 24 in that model. Cool. This is actually a good test for me, Maddie, remembering all the model numbers. Hoka, the Clifton, you know, I think we're number 6 with that model, another good daily trainer. And then what's another brand? The Saucony Triumph, which is number 17. Again, like, that's a really kind of soft, neutral long run type shoe. Yeah, so a few models there, you know, they all like fit and feel a little bit different on the foot. So obviously, you know, you want to make sure that that you don't just go off what I've said there, but yeah, covering quite a few models there with your neutral options. And look, some of them are probably a little bit more versatile in the way that you could use them for more than just your long run. And others maybe are, might just complement your, you know, that long, easy run a little bit better.
Yeah, because I know with Talia, like I've said a few, like pick up long runs. So say where she's running 1 hour 45 to 2 hours and you've got, you know, a half an hour pickup somewhere in the middle or towards the end of the run. And you're talking about versatility. So like say the Nike Pegasus 37s would be one that's a bit more versatile for that sort of pickup.
Potentially, yeah. Like, I mean, the good thing about almost all those models I mentioned, and I don't know if I'd actually mentioned ASICS, who they've got their Nimbus Light. I think that's number 22, and there are Cumulus, which again is, I think we're up to number 22 with that model. Yeah, like some of them probably are a little bit more versatile in that, you know, the you could pick up the pace a bit more in one of those models versus the other. But the Peg 37 would definitely be one. You know, like the New Balance 1080, that's, you know, that's quite smooth. It's got a bit of a rocket type geometry to it. So, you know, the faster you run it, the more it's going to kind of probably feel better through that 4 foot section of the shoe.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, maybe something like the Hoka Clifton that I mentioned, like I kind of feel like, you know, when you do start to go faster in a model like that, it maybe doesn't respond as well as some of those others. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But look, I mean, for the most part, you could probably get away with one of those models being your daily trainer, and if you happen to go a bit faster in it, you're probably going to be okay as well.
Yep. Awesome.
Yeah. But yeah, hope that answers that for your runner there.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure she'll, get something out of that for sure. And next one, cool. Actually from one of Gemma's athletes, Carl, he's, had a bit of difficulty, finding and not sure of the different options he's got for racing shoes that are 2E or wide fit.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I reckon a lot of brands are recognising that, like, more runners these days have quite broad feet. So I think they are trying to actually bring out some models in that wider fit, that 2E sizing. And it's definitely something we see in the shop. Like, a lot of people have really broad feet and they don't fit into certain models. So yeah, Hoka do, look, I personally don't know the shoe that well, but the Hoka Carbon X, like most Hoka shoes are fairly broad fitting, so that could be a model he could consider. Ultra is a brand that they're really good with their kind of like 4 foot space and width through the shoe. So it's a fairly kind of low to the ground type brand, Ultra, but that could be an option for him. You know, like some, like even the Endorphin Pro, like I wouldn't say it's a really broad fitting shoe, but it is a little bit wider on the foot than definitely the Nike Next Percent and the ASICS Meta Racer. Yeah, so.
Yeah, because I've found that better, Nike Next Percent is quite a narrow fit.
But I mean, look, Carl might, you know, if he could get away with maybe using a just like a neutral type shoe as his race shoe and maybe sourced a model that comes in a wide in even though the Peg is a narrow kind of last there, they do actually do a wider fit in the Peg, so something like that could maybe work. Or you know, a wide fit in like an 880 or something.
Yep.
Yeah, might just have to play around. But I do know out of these, say, the Carbon models, I reckon the Hoka Carbon X would probably be the broader shoe I can think of.
Yep.
Yeah. Or even actually Skechers, believe it or not, are doing some good shoes. And I think their Carbon shoe might be called the Speed Pro. I think from some of the pictures and that I've seen of that, it's quite a wide fitting shoe as well. So that could work as well. Yeah.
That's good. Yeah, it was good because Carl actually hit a PB over his 5K yesterday too. So
awesome.
Yeah, that was a very impressive result from Carl.
Yeah, that's great.
And then another one from the Fire Is Your Life. So this is another the Fiery's wife, another Run to PB athlete that Mads coaches. How do I know the difference between a race day shoe, a tempo shoe, and a speed shoe, etc.?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I think if you just walked into a shop, probably the easiest way to like self-select for yourself would be just to pick up the shoe and just go by weight. Like, I think that's a pretty good way of going, well, the lighter shoe is probably going to be more focused towards speed, and the heavier shoe is going to be more, you know, focused towards like training and going long in a shoe. But I think like speed, like it's really, I suppose, subjective and contextual to the person that's using the shoe. You know, and I mean, we could even use you as an example here, Matty. Like you're a 2 hour 20 marathon runner. So your needs in a what you consider a fast shoe are going to be quite different to say someone that takes, you know, 3 hours 20 in a marathon, or maybe someone that takes, you know, 4 hours 20. So yeah, I think it's actually really quite individual when we say, you know, I want a speed shoe. But I think the weight of the shoe is probably quite a simple way just to you know, determine, you know, could that be a speed shoe versus, you know, could that be a tempo shoe versus, you know, could that just be a long run type shoe?
Yep. And yeah, because I know like the tempo shoe, I use the New Balance TNC as well as the Pegasus Turbo at the moment. And I guess, yeah, they're both got, I mean, probably the Turbo probably weighs a little bit less, I think. They're both, I guess, got that. There's a difference in weight. Like the Turbos have got the P-backs. They got the foam in it, don't they?
I think the Turbo run the probably the Zoom X, if it's the model there. Whereas actually the... Yeah, now with the Peg 37, they've gone to the React foam. But, the two models that you mentioned there, like, it's just a good example of, like, you know, there's a bit of cushion there on the shoe, but it's still relatively light. So, you know, sometimes that's all you need for it to be, well, that could be a tempo shoe. I think sometimes we use the word speed and straight away align that with, like, you know, a particular type of shoe, but really, like, speed can be like really different for each person.
All right, we had another question here from Sally, and she was wondering how she could justify a trail shoe into her rotation.
Okay, yeah, it's a good one. I mean, I suppose, you know, obviously you're looking a little bit more at a shoe that might be safer for the purpose that you're using it for. So, you know, sometimes when we're running trails, they can be quite technical in terms of like just being slippery underfoot or needing, needing to be, you know, kind of fairly stable with your movements. So, you know, probably the easiest way to explain how like a trail shoe might be a bit different to your traditional running shoe is, you know, like the traction underneath and on the outer sole, like it's, you know, it's a lot, you know, grippier, you know, for a simpler way of explaining it. So, you know, it really kind of, you know, has that traction to the ground so that you don't lose balance when you're going uphill or downhill. And then, you know, probably the other thing that's a little bit different with a trail shoe is just the upper normally has like a bit more integrity to it. Like you might even have some Gore-Tex features where you can keep the water out, things like that. So yeah, it's a little bit more of a, almost like a robust shoe. It's not necessarily a lot heavier. I mean, the cool thing these days is there's a lot of good brands now that are doing trail shoes and putting, you know, some of the, even like the foams that they're using in their road models into their trail models, that it's, yeah, just keeping with those, you know, a bit more traction underfoot for the person. Yeah. And I suppose, you know, it really depends on how technical a trail you might be running. Like some road shoes you could get away with being on maybe on like a bush path that's, you know, not that technical, but then, you know, if you're really going up some steep rocky hills or down some steep hills on a trail, that's where those trail shoes can really help the runner.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, because like I try to get out onto the trails as much as I can, but I don't usually venture out into the really rough and tough terrain and up and down cliffs and things like that. But yeah, if I was to, I think I'd want to be looking for a shoe that's going to give me a good lot of
go with a your trails need to be, I think, fairly technical, you know, to maybe justify a trail shoe. But look, I mean, even if you're living somewhere that gets quite muddy all the time when you go and run, like that's, you know, you could quite easily get away with a trail shoe for that type of terrain, for sure.
Yeah, I was out running a few months ago and I hit the deck on just a nice ash path.
Some brands these days are almost doing a bit more of like a hybrid model. So it's, you know, how can I explain it? It's almost like 80% road shoe with, you know, 20% trail features. So it doesn't have those real heavy type lugs through the outer sole and that, but just a bit more traction underfoot than your road shoe. But when you actually put it on and look down at your foot and the feel of the shoe, it just feels like your road shoe with a bit more grip on it. You know, like the Nike Trail Pegasus, like that's a good example of that. Like it really just fits like your Nike Pegasus fits on the foot, but it's just got the bit more traction underfoot. Yep. Hoka do a few models there as well that fit into that. So yeah, I suppose there's your real trail shoes, and then there's your hybrid models that have a bit more of a crossover functionality to them.
That makes sense. And then the last question we had from his Instagram handle was Plant Juiced Ryan.
Sure.
Best place to get a shoe fit in Melbourne? Because I know if I head down to some of the local stores around here, they're not great with actual shoe fitting. They kind of just look at your foot and what size are you? Oh, yeah, this is a bit of all right. I think you got this one. Is there any sort of specialist shoe fitting places in Melbourne that you'd suggest to try out?
Yeah, I mean a lot of specialist fitting places, they do what we do at the running company, and that they do the gait analysis. You know, a lot of their staff are really well trained in the podiatry side of injuries and footwear. But I suppose from my experience and having people come into the shop and tell me where they were fitted previously, some of these places maybe pay a bit too much attention to like the rear foot analysis that goes on when we do the gait. So what we're looking at there is like, you know, like the level of pronation that's occurring through the heel. And sometimes if that's all you're focused on, it would be very easy just to go, oh, wow, like, look at that movement. We need to go and throw you into a really supportive type shoe. So, you know, even though that's a process of our fitting, it's not what we solely focus on. Like, you know, we do pay a little bit of attention to that rear foot, you know, what we're seeing there, but then more so just what's happening throughout the whole gait cycle. You know, does the runner have the ability to kind of go from that pronation movement into more like a supinated position and get back off in a like a neutral type stance? And so that's where you don't want to just I suppose focus too much on one particular movement and then make the assumption that all right, you must have this type of shoe. So yeah, I think places that where the people fitting the shoes have a good understanding of running and, you know, different running sessions and so forth, and, you know, then still have that understanding of the gait analysis and so forth, that's where you'll probably get the right shoe on your foot, versus those places that just maybe pay too much attention to, you know, just that rear foot vision and go from there. And unfortunately, like, you know, I have fitted a lot of people that they even walked out of a shop knowing that the shoe was uncomfortable where they got it from previously, but they were just told they needed that shoe. And that, you know, that's almost, I suppose, the opposite to our philosophy, in that, you know, we're much more on how does the shoe feel to you, and then we can kind of back up that with, you know, how is the shoe looking on the through the gait analysis. Yeah, so I mean, I'm probably a little bit biased there, that, you know, I feel like our fitting philosophy is pretty strong, and, you know, we've got some really happy, satisfied customers. But
yeah, if you're getting those satisfied customers, you know, you're getting that good feedback, you know, you've got to be doing a good job.
Yeah, I mean, like it's funny, like, we always encourage our customers to be open-minded with their choices, and I mean, we try to do the same when we're fitting people. Like, we don't try to just, you know, classify people as a, you must have this shoe or you need that shoe. And, you know, we're often surprised by how a shoe might work for someone. Like the features of the shoe, we might consider them, like, I don't know, like soft and plush, but you put them on someone's foot and they go, oh yeah, that feels nice and firm and stable. So, you know, if that's what the person's feeling, then that's what they're feeling. And we're not going to butt in and go, oh no, but that's actually not how that shoe works. So yeah. Yeah, we're always kind of happily surprised too with the feedback that we get from people when we're fitting them.
Yeah, that's exciting. Good.
And,
it makes a difference.
We'll have to get you in the shop, Matty.
What's that?
We'll have to get you in the shop one day.
Yep. Yeah, no, get me on the treadmill and have a look at my gait. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah, perfect.
Yeah. Thanks heaps for coming on, Sammy. I'm sure the listeners will have gathered a lot of valuable information there, and ticked off quite a few questions.
Yeah, there were some good ones. It was good.
Yeah, there was. Yeah, I was impressed with the amount of questions that we got coming through. And yeah, we'll have to do it again, because we've got a few more there to tick off. But yeah, no, sure. thanks very much again for giving up your time and coming on. And looking forward to
it's good fun. And as I touched on, like, maybe the message we could leave the listeners with today is, like, you know, have a bit of fun with your shoes. Don't overthink it too much. Don't give the shoe too much credit to what it's doing for you. And just get out there and enjoy some different shoes.
Yep. Awesome. Oh, that's a great message.
Perfect. Cool.
All right. Enjoy the rest of the day.
All right, Matty.
Thanks, mate.
Yeah, cheers, mate. Good to chat. Bye.
Bye. All right, thanks for listening to this week's episode of the Better With Running podcast. We'd really like to thank Sapreeth and Sammy for coming on the show and having a chat. And hopefully everyone took something out of those two interviews. And Jack, obviously, for taking the mic on and doing such a good job with his chat with Sapreeth. But as always, if you've got any questions or topics, please hit us up on the socials at Run2PB, both on our Instagram and Facebook. Or there's a contact us form on our website at run2pb.co/betterwithrunning.
Also, Matty, just thanks again to everyone listening. Just wanted to cut in there, mate. Wanted to mention to the listeners a couple of exciting things that are happening at Run2PB. We've had Chris Armstrong join us as a Run2PB coach, so you can check him out on our socials. We've just launched a bit of a video and an introduction. I'm going to sit down with him in the next week or so, and we're going to dig into his running journey and learn about his coaching philosophy. So that'll be a good one. And the other one, another live event's coming with Brad Beer, who is a physio based up in Brisbane, or up on the Gold Coast at the Pogo Physio. And we're going to get online and do a live stream and talk about, bone strength and its correlation to injuries, and just a general talk about some running injuries. And so, yeah, I'm looking forward to that one, Matt. I'm sure you're going to jump on and have a look.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, also really intrigued to see, to hear and listen to those. And for now, though, everyone, we hope you have an idyllic rest of your run.